Welcome to Drinking Bros, presented by GhostBed.com. Sit back, relax, and grab a fucking drink.
What is up? Welcome to Tomahawked. I am your host, Rob Fox, joined as always by Dan Holloway. Our Atlanta Braves are still a game out of first place. Pennant race is fully on now. The Braves and Mets keep winning and losing on the same days. So,
yeah, I mean, it's, you know, convenient or inconvenient, depending on your perspective, I suppose.
I feel like this is basically what happened last year before that big series with the Phillies, is we kept, like, legitimately, like, winning. Both teams would just win and lose on the same day.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. The Mets do not play today. The Braves do, so we can pick up, what, a half game? If we beat the Phillies, I think Fried is going tonight.
Yeah, I believe that is the case. And
yeah, Fried versus Ranger Suarez. So Suarez, not bad. 3.53 ERA, 1.30 whip, though.
He gave us a bit of an ass ache the last time we faced him. But their bullpen's not very deep. I think he went, what, six innings and gave up one earned run, and we ended up winning that game 7-2. So, you know, I'm not terribly concerned about tonight. The Braves hit lefties really well. although the middle of their lineup has been pretty ice cold lately.
Yeah, we'll get to that, unfortunately. But I wanted to start with probably the biggest news. We've kind of floated this all year, but Spencer Strider held out of a start. Now, he's listed as day-to-day on, like, my fantasy roster.
Sure, yeah.
But the explanation was, and I think they said, like, pectoral soreness or something like that.
Oblique
soreness, yeah. Okay. But the explanation is essentially keep him fresh.
Yeah, and it's something that the Astros just did it with Verlander. The Mets put Scherzer on the 15-day IL for the same. It's the same
couple weeks ago, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
For the same reason, it does a couple of things. It allows you to reset your rotation and get everybody back in the order that you want them for the playoffs, and also gives this young kid a week off so he comes back strong. Look, he's not having any problems, but
no,
why not? You know. This is the most he's ever pitched in a year.
By like a pretty good margin, I think.
Yeah, he's... I can't remember...
He hasn't doubled up, but I want to say it wasn't his year, biggest year, like 90 innings or something crazy like that.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, he's had...
He's got 132 innings, basically,
yeah,
right now.
Yeah, so he's the first pitcher in baseball history to have over 200 strikeouts and surrender less than 100 hits.
And he's got like 80-something hits, right?
84. So unless he gives up 16 hits in his next game, I think it's, or 86. So unless he gives up 14 hits and what will probably be his final start of the year, he's going to be the first person to ever do that, which is pretty impressive.
I mean, dude, if he, so we can talk about this, cause I have on here, like, I mean, he's got to be the rookie of the year over Harris at this point, right?
I don't know. Harris plays every day. That's always going to be the argument. Like, if you have a guy,
but what is the argument here is essentially it's playing extremely well every day.
Yep.
Versus pitching once every 5 days, but doing it not just extremely well, but like historically well.
Well, it's not a great comparison because Ohtani does both. But let's just say, one of those years that Pedro had where he was 23-4 one year with like a 180 ERA versus the year that Aaron Judge is having right now. Who's the MVP?
Right.
I would say probably Judge, right? Because he plays every day.
I think that's fair.
So I think Harris will probably win.
But here's the thing with that though. So you're talking about 99. Pedro Martinez.
Yeah, I think it was like a 2.30 ERA.
23-4, a 2.07 ERA.
2.07. Yeah.
His wins above replacement was 11.6. Here's the thing with that though. So yeah, Judge is having an incredible year. And all that stuff, and he's, you know, hit 60 home runs, which is insane and everything. But like having Pedro Martinez on the mound he started 29 games that year. He got 23 wins. I don't know how many of their games he won whatever, but like basically putting Pedro Martinez on the mound that year more or less guaranteed you call it like 19, 20 wins.
And what year was that?
99. They made the playoffs that year, for sure. I don't know what they did, but...
AL MVP. The AL MVP that year was Ivan Rodriguez and not Pedro.
Yeah.
And Ivan Rodriguez that year, let's see, 6.4 wins above replacement, 35 home runs, 113 RBI, 25 steals.
Good and, Lord, for a catcher?
Yeah, and also played, he had 199 hits. He also played elite defense that year.
About as good of a defense as any catcher's played, except for Yadier Molina, probably.
So that's the, I mean, it's just, it's not that I feel one way or the other about it. As a matter of fact, I think it would be appropriate, especially
they split it.
Since they're on the same team and since, you know, when Strider went into the rotation and Harris made it into the lineup, that's when the season turned around for them. I think they have equal shares in Rookie of the Year, to be honest.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I don't want to, you know, cutting the baby in half, right? Like, I don't really know who I could pick because I love both of them quite a bit. And they've both been excellent. But, man, I mean, Strider is doing historic shit, which is interesting to me. But, so, yeah, maybe. I think he probably does win Rookie of the Year over Harris, even if
it's possible.
Even if it's maybe not, if it's a really close debate or whatever.
He's set a record, so.
I mean, do you think if he starts all year, here's the thing, though, that I will say. If Harris and Strider start the year in the majors, I don't know that Harris is getting MVP votes, but Strider is maybe a Cy Young front runner.
Probably, but that's apples and buttholes, right? I mean, if you track Harris's statistics over the course of a 162 game season, it's still, I don't know that it would be an MVP caliber season, but here's what it is. Well, it's a .308 batting average, 30 home runs, 30 steals, 95 RBI, 40 doubles, and he plays the best outfield defense in baseball.
Yeah.
That he may win the MVP there, but he wouldn't be running away with it. And I think you're right. Strider, if he had pitched, if he had 32 starts, probably would be the front runner for Cy Young.
Where is he on the... I'll have to look this up real quick because I don't have it in front of me, but he's got to be near the top of strikeout leaders.
He's like fifth or something, I think.
This year. So, man, fucking internet's being the internet.
I think he's... Let's see. And I'm talking about in all of baseball. I think he's sixth in all of baseball.
And he has...
In the National League, he's third. Fourth.
And he's only pitched 131 innings.
Yeah, so the guys in front of him have an average of about 50 more innings pitched than him.
Yeah. So he would be running away with... He'd be running away.
Oh, yeah. If you...
And by the way, 11 wins in... So he started 20 games. Essentially, everyone else in front of him has started 29 or 30 games.
Correct, yeah.
He has 11 wins in those 20. I mean, you're talking about a guy certainly over 15 wins, you would think.
And over three... By the way, over 300 strikeouts.
Yeah,
which isn't something that really happens much anymore. But I fully expect, unless he's, barring some kind of injury next year, Spencer Strider will certainly strike out 300 or more people. And he, to be honest, he's probably going to do it throughout his 20s and early 30s. I mean, the record for most 300 strikeout seasons is Nolan Ryan. I think he's got 6, and I think Randy Johnson has 5.
Yeah.
But nobody else. I think there's maybe one or two other people that even have more than one. It just doesn't happen much. And all of those guys did it, you know, back in the day. Now it's, you know, it's pretty interesting. It's pretty goddamn interesting. He's I don't know that I've ever seen something like this since maybe Doc Gooden, like a rookie come in and just fucking mow people down like this.
That's crazy.
Probably the last time we saw something like that.
And we were talking about it off air. It's essentially just like having a closer for the first 5 innings.
Yeah.
And what's really fascinating about Strider too, that I kind of always forget, because the biggest knock on Strider, well, there's two knocks on Strider. One, that he only has 2 pitches, although that doesn't seem to be a problem yet. And the second one is that he goes deep into counts a lot, and thus does not go deep into games.
Well, I think that's what the third pitch is going to buy him up. I assume his offseason is going to primarily be spent developing his changeup, because, you know, and maybe that doesn't even work for him because the speed and movement is so disparate in his pitches and he throws so fucking hard. I just don't know if he's ever going to be able to pitch to contact the way that we expect people to pitch to contact.
Well, I mean, with the changeup, I mean, really just be to completely fuck their timing, right?
Yeah. I mean, that would help a little bit. But then, you know, you got to – the things that somebody like him to perfect, the slider's good. I mean, it's a plus pitch already, and he's a fucking rookie, which is crazy. But if he can throw his fastball letter high at the top of the zone, that is an unhittable pitch.
Yeah.
If he can throw it for a strike at the top of the zone, nobody will ever hit that ball. So you're going to get a lot of pop-ups and a lot of broken bats there. That's a good thing. That can probably shave down some of the pitches. But that, I think that's what, you know, you don't want to surrender the dominance, obviously.
No, absolutely not. I mean, well, the problem is essentially, it may just be a problem of control, really, because a lot of the times he goes deep into counts, he's ahead.
Yeah,
you know, and then essentially he just keeps throwing the ball and he misses a little bit, and then all of a sudden it's 2-2, 3-2, and then he'll usually finish him off. But that, so that's kind of the knock. But
let's,
what's interesting,
see the
though,
splits on him with two strikes, 0-1, gives up a lot of hits, 1-2, not many hits. 0-2, not many hits. So the batting average against him at 0-2 is 0.65. The batting average against him at 1-2 is 1.52. Even at 2-2, it's 1.29. As I think, and at 3-2, it's 1.09. So it doesn't really matter where in the count, as long as he's ahead, he's doing pretty well. I think maybe it's just having a second out pitch, so they can't flail at the slider and push it and wait for another fastball, maybe. I don't know.
Right.
We'll see.
Kind of just what? Maybe dink the slider, especially if there's a shift or something. Like you got a pull hitter up and he throws a slider on the outer half of the zone.
Yeah.
And then the guy's just able to, you know, kind of stick his bat out there. So I was reading today. I actually was asking this because I thought about this based on what you said the other day. You're like, would you put Strider late in a game? 6 or 7, maybe he pitched game 3 or something. Would you put him, you know, whatever, late in a later game of the series, despite his rest or whatever? But my question was going to be, we were talking yesterday and we said, like, yeah, he's probably the number 3 starter in the rotation, right? It is Fried number 1, no question, and it should be Fried number 1. And then Wright, Strider, Morton. My question, though, is, would it actually make more sense to go Fried, Strider, right, Morton? That is how Mark Bowman has it projected, by the way.
Maybe. I mean, so maybe because Fried and Wright sit at about the same velocity, so maybe you want to mix it up like that.
Yeah, and we've talked about that before, about how, or with Maddox, Glavin, and Smoltz, how we think there may have been some weirdness for the Braves because it might have been more effective to put Smoltz in the middle of Maddox and Glavin.
I think it would have been, yeah.
As a sort of like fucking with the hitter's timing over the course of, you know, 3 games.
I mean, honestly, yeah, that's not the worst idea. And the interesting thing is these are two young 26 and 23-year-old guys, although Fried's only 28, so it's not like he's old, but they already have plenty of confidence. I mean, Kyle Wright, even in the postseason, has plenty of confidence.
Pitched brilliantly in the World Series last year.
Yeah, and I don't think if Odorizzi gets a start in the playoffs, I think it'll probably be like game 5 of the World Series if they're up 3-1 or something like that.
Yeah.
Although I think, in my opinion, they should bring Fried back on short rest for that game. That's what I would do. But we'll see how it works, because that's kind of what cost them the 2020 LCS.
Yeah. The LCS, I forgot about this, reading back about it, but there were no off days for that because of COVID.
Yeah.
They were just like, we got to get these games out as quickly as we fucking can.
I don't care. but yeah, it's I could see it going Fried, Strider, Wright. Although, you know, Wright's already a proven entity, so do you want to fuck with that? I don't know. I'm not sure it really matters. Like, it'd be nice to upset the hitter's timing and shit like that, but to be honest, if you're going up against Strider or Fried, I don't know if it matters who just pitched.
Yeah.
Because those guys are so fucking dominant anyways. And as of late, well, actually, Kyle Wright's got 19 wins this year, but as of late, he's been particularly good as well and not having any off days.
He's been excellent. I mean, he's been just quietly brilliant for the Braves all year. Mm-hmm. I almost feel bad because people just like forget about him.
Yeah, I don't even know if he's gonna like he'll probably get some down ballot Cy Young votes, but he's not really in the conversation, I don't think.
No, he reminds me of, I mean, he's having a much better year than this guy, but it reminds me of that year Russ Ortiz had with us when he won 20 games.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, Urias has had a pretty good year, although he's missed time, right? He's got 28 starts. No, he's made most of his starts. I think he missed one. And then the front runner is
Alcantara,
I guess, but he's only got 13. Maybe he'll get 14 wins. Not that that always matters. There's plenty of 15 and below Cy Young winners, but
there is enough old voters still where that will maybe matter with some, although not as many as it used to. But I mean, right, a 3.18 ERA, and they don't show his whip on the leader page. I got to go to check it out, but a good whip too.
His whip is 1.16.
Yeah, that's fine. That's not really a Cy Young. Those aren't Cy Young numbers though, really, other than the 19 wins. But I mean, Rodon has actually been almost as dominant as Alcantara has.
Yeah.
Rodon is the league leader, major league leader in wins above replacement.
Yeah.
And then weirdly, he definitely won't win it, but, Aaron Nola racked up a lot of wins above replacement, at least.
A lot of strikeouts, yeah. Not a lot of walks.
But
I think he's only walked like 25 people all year, some shit like that.
Yeah. Actually, all the best pitchers in the National League, not a lot of wins this year, oddly enough. Freed's only got 13. Alcantara's only got 13. Rodon's only got 13. And those are literally, by statistics, the three best National League pitchers. You have to go down. I don't know. You Darvish has fucking 15 wins. Who cares?
Yeah, I'd have to look at the... at their run support and stuff like that and their average innings pitch and shit. But,
you know, I honestly, if you don't care about strikeouts and wins above replacement, like massively values strikeouts.
Yeah.
Urias is 17-7, 2.27 ERA. I guess the knock would be he's only thrown 158 innings.
Yeah. He doesn't stick around very long. I mean, he's got, Wright's pitched the same amount of games and he's got what, fucking 15 more innings pitch, or I guess 12 more innings pitch. Yeah, so I don't know, to me those two guys are kind of a wash. It's probably going to be Alcantara.
Yeah, it's going to be Alcantara. I think you're right. Which, whatever, I'm fine with that. I don't really care. But to your question that you asked me the other day, I mean, I would like to see a sort of like, I don't know that I would like to see Strider used in a really like egregiously unnecessary fucking Max Scherzer sort of way.
No, that's stupid. That was a huge mistake.
That was such a cell phone by Dave Roberts. But yeah, if it's the World Series and you know he's not going to have another start.
Yeah, may as well.
Literally. I would not even do it in the NLCS.
And to be honest, the last couple of days I've been thinking, does it make more sense to have Oda Rizzi in the four slot and have Morton be the guy coming out of the pen, because he's just more dominant in a situation like that? I guess maybe it depends on who's pitching in front of you, but if it's like the third, middle of the third inning and the starter's having trouble, whomever it is, I'm almost more inclined to use Morton in that situation than Oda Rizzi. I don't know if Oda Rizzi's like, I know he's got experience with that in the playoffs, but Morton's quite good at that.
Yeah.
Coming in. But I don't know that it'll matter. I mean,
I want to look at Morton's numbers recently though, because he's been just so good.
Yeah, he has been very good.
That, I mean,
I wouldn't be surprised, by the way, to see Bryce Elder make the playoff roster as well.
I agree. Elder's got a pretty good ERA.
Yeah. His issue in his first time up was he fucking walked people a lot. And he's still walking to a game, but not nearly as bad as he was back in fucking April.
Right. Morton in September and October, in August, 12.6 K-9. September, October, 11.12. And then whips of 0.99 and 1.15. I mean, he's been pitching really well. His xFIP 2.75, 3.80. His ERA has been, I think, just okay, but I, you know, he's kind of pitched better than his ERA, if I remember correctly. ERA in August 3.26, ERA in September and October 3.97. But I think he's been pitching better than both of those numbers would indicate. And I mean, when Morton's throwing a game when his curveball's on,
yeah,
I mean, it's I don't know. Five innings out of Morton at the start with a tie score as opposed to, I don't know, three innings out of Morton when we're down. I don't know. It could go either way with
yeah. that. Yeah, we'll see how it goes. I mean, I'm not terribly concerned about it, to be honest. It you have the luxury of going with whomever has the hot hand at that point, to be honest. And although Odorizzi's last couple starts have been pretty good, too. So not nearly as dominant as Morton, though. Morton's been pretty on.
Yeah. So, yeah, I would like to see Strider used out of the bullpen once. I would be fine with that in a sort of like game six or game seven of the World Series. Mm. Maybe in the NLCS. I don't want to see that in a potential wild card series or a DS, though.
No, probably not, because then you're not going to see him until game four of that following series if you move on. So
right. Well, and the thing, too, with that is that, like,
then you don't have time to reset yourself unless you get lucky and sweep and then have time to reset. But even then, that's too big a risk. You don't want to fucking... You're nuking him out of the next series, basically.
Right. And... I don't know. It's just the wild card series in particular is so short that you shouldn't, even if you're in a, you know, like you got all hands on deck mode type of situation, you shouldn't even have to go to him at that point.
Yeah.
The same way the Dodgers had no excuse. There was no reason to go to Max Scherzer last year.
No, they could go. I mean, before Strider, they could go to Morton and then chain together their bullpen to close out a wild card game. Yeah. That would be a mistake.
Yeah. I think that's fine. But LCS, I would be mostly okay with it, if only because you don't throw away a chance that close to the World Series to get there. And certainly in the World Series, it is fucking like it's the end of the line. So who cares? But yeah, that's how I'd probably handle that. Next up, shit luckier for Ozzie Albies.
Yeah.
Gonna have to potentially win another World Series without one of our best young players.
Yeah, I don't know what the latest is on that, but I can't. I mean, it's not a compound fracture or anything like that, but you know, what he came back for what a game?
Literally, his first game back, he broke his finger.
Are you going to bring a guy like that back into the middle of a playoff series
to see if he can work it out?
Yeah, like I doubt it. What would be the point? At that point, I guess if
he was, he was raking in his rehab assignment.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But you're just not going to have the same amount of time to ease back into things in the middle of a playoff series like that. Like maybe they have, you know, they use their advanced spring training team and do some live pitching for him. If we're in the wild card round or whatever the fuck, and he's starting to feel better. So he can get some at bats, you know, in a non meaningful environment. But you have to bring him into the middle of a playoff series. I don't think that's a good idea.
Yeah, it's man,
but it's not that big of a problem. I mean, Vaughn Grissom has played pretty well. Plays great defense too.
Yeah, I'm not too worried about. I mean, look, I would rather have both of them, yeah. Vaughn Grissom and Albies. Like, it's the type of situation where, I mean, it worked out last year, right? It's like, yeah, I'd rather have a Acuña, but at the end of the day, everyone else played so well that would you have rather had Acuña last year? Like, then Jock Peterson and Jorge Soler and Eddie Rosario?
Yeah.
I don't think the answer is yes.
It's a lot of flexibility.
So there's that. But what's interesting... With the Albies thing, or not with the Albies thing, or yeah, I guess with the Albies thing, I guess you could say, is the Braves have had some shitty playoff injury luck the last couple of years. Acuña out last year, Dansby out in 2018, and then even you want to go all the way back, we lost a very winnable LDS against the Giants in 2010 because Chipper Jones... was out. Billy Wagner got hurt in game one of that series. And I think Martin Prado got hurt right before the playoffs started as well, which is why Brooks Conrad was at second base committing errors.
Yeah. Yeah. Didn't he have three in one game?
Yeah. It was fucking brutal. I really hope, though, that Albies is on the bench for the entire playoffs.
Yeah. I think he'll be present as a cheerleader for sure.
Because Acuña wasn't there, I think, to the World Series, but. Yeah. Unlike Acuña, we've talked about this a million times before. Albies is an actual like leader on this team. Acuna is there to put up stats, put up numbers, right? Like he doesn't have to lead yet, but Albies is already like one of those dudes.
Yeah,
I would be. And I know Snicker's still the manager, and there's still a bunch of other dudes, Riley, Dansby, blah, blah, but I think it would be detrimental in some way to not have Albies with that team the entire time.
I mean, honestly, I'd be surprised if he's not there.
Unless he's literally rehabbing to play for them.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, but it's you can't rehab 24 hours a fucking day.
Right.
The game's 3 hours, I'm pretty sure. I don't know how you quickly rehab a broken finger. You know, just drink milk, maybe? I have no idea.
Just do the Curt Schilling thing. Put a bunch of cortisone in your fucking hand and just fucking roll with it.
Yeah.
I guess this solves the problem of, you know, like, who goes where? Because Vaughn Grissom's not going to be in left field now. It's going to be, you know, Grossman and Rosario. Maybe sometimes both Grossman and Rosario in the outfield.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, if they're going to use Acuna at DH sometimes, although I think that's, you want to avoid that because he's a better fielder than either one of them.
Oh yeah,
for sure.
100%.
And also you want to keep that DH spot open, I think, for Contreras as much as possible. He's been fucking tearing it up lately
for both Contreras and Darno. Right.
Yeah. Sure.
Assuming you like don't
whoever's
want,
not catching that day. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, I guess that in a way, I don't know if that, does that injury give us like more or less roster flexibility? In some ways it feels like more, not that I'm happy for it, but.
No, probably a little bit more, yeah, because otherwise you're going to have to send, who would you be sending down? Arcia, probably.
Or you'd get rid of Ozuna.
Yeah, maybe, I guess, but to be honest, I really don't see the purpose in having Ozuna on the playoff roster, unless you're going to DH him against lefties or something like that. But is he going to be better in that role than Contreras
or Grossman?
I mean, yeah, Grossman doesn't have the power capability, I guess the potential power that Ozuna has, but he's hit for a higher average, I guess. It depends on where you hit him in the lineup, but definitely not better than Contreras. He's been pretty consistent all year.
Yeah. It's an interesting situation as always. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we'll see what happens. Oh, and then the other one I was going to say that I forgot about, and then we don't have Soroka for the 2020 playoffs,
right?
Because he started the year actually healthy.
Yeah.
I mean, fuck, man, it's literally every single year that a Brian Snicker team has gone to the playoffs, they've had one hand tied behind their back, which sucks. But it is what it is. Real quick, we'll get to the advertisements before we keep going. Winning season has officially returned. The NFL is here. College football is here. They are in full swing, and you gotta bet with MyBookie.com. Whether you're a season better or a first-time better, MyBookie.com gets you the most for your money with a double deposit bonus up to $1,000. To claim your bonus, sign up using the promo code DRINKINBROS on your first deposit. And then you'll instantly double your money with MyBookie. It's simple. You know, if you put in $250, they will give you another $250. If you put in up to $1,000. So if you put in $1,000, they will give you another $1,000. Put in $1,500, you still only get $1,000. But that's a lot of money. So you can get a free $1,000 to play with, to have fun with. In sports gambling, in their casino where they have like live bettors and stuff like that, you can use your funds to bet on props, individual games, contests. I don't know what... They usually have contests for the NFL and college. I don't play those, but they do a March Madness bracket every year, like a huge one where you can win, like, I think $1 million or some insane amount. They do similar stuff with the NFL and stuff like that. I forget what it is off the top of my head. But you can bet on win totals, all kinds of stuff. So use MyBookie.com. They even have a prop builder, which is pretty rad. I don't see a lot of places have those. They do anything you can imagine to bet on, you can bet on. So bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie.com. Bookie.com. They're the best. Best in the biz. Next up, the Braves. One game back of the Mets, although I'm not quite sure how they're doing it, aside from the fact that the Mets are not putting their foot on our throat, because there are a lot of, basically all the big name bats for the Braves are slumping right now.
Sure, but like, it's not as though the Braves have... been slumping as a team. They've still been winning games.
They're 13-5 in the month of September, which is great.
So good pitching. So in the month of September, team ERA is 2.83, and that's your answer. Because the offense has been pretty, I wouldn't say anemic. The middle and bottom of the order have been pretty good, as they have been all year, by the way.
But yeah.
The middle of the order has not been great. From 2 to 5, really, has struggled. But if you look at the season statistics, right, just from a production standpoint, let's say RBIs. So out of the 2-3-4 hole, you've got 82, 90, and 92. And then out of 7-8-9, you've got 69, 70, and 91 RBI on the season. So that's depth. And you can have some of your better guys struggle for a couple of days if you have great pitching and offensive depth. And we saw it last year when Freddie Freeman struck out 7 goddamn times in a row in the middle of our lineup. In the playoffs. And to be honest, we weren't that hurt by it. You know what I mean? Because that's the way the team was built.
No, they won those games. They won both of those games.
Yeah.
So I mean, he hit that home run off Hader, and then I think it took him like 2 or 3 games before he had another hit.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's like, if you look at the batting averages up and down the lineup, it's 250, except for the 5-hole. The 5-hole's been, and I think it's because Ozzie was there for a long time. He struggled, and then we had some replacement guys in.
It's been rotating since Ozzie went down.
And then 7, which for the first half of the season, that's where Ozuna was batting.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, more or less throughout the lineup, it's pretty steady. And I think that's the reason they're still winning games, man.
Absolutely. So that's the interesting thing. So the big name bats, the only thing that really, and granted, this is just 14 days, people slump, whatever, whatever. But the four big bats, the four bats that we're like, these are our guys, like these are the four that have to produce, especially since Albies is not in there. They've been kind of spectacularly bad. Swanson, 90 WRC, WRC plus, still 3 homers over the last 14 days, which is good, but for him especially, and 8 RBI. But so essentially he's doing Dansby Swanson things, right? Mm-hmm. Hitting when he needs to.
Yeah.
Acuna, 102 WRC plus, which is above water, but not what you want out of Ronald Acuna.
Yeah.
3 stolen bases at least, so that I maybe shows some level of health, I guess you could say, in the legs. Riley, this is where it gets really fucking grim, though. Austin Riley over the last 2 weeks, 57 WRC plus, which is, 43 points below what a league mediocre player would be.
Yeah.
2 homers, batting 174, OBP 240, and then Matt Olson. This is what I really wanted to talk about, because we were texting about this the other day. -7 WRC plus, so a dead body would actually be better hitting. That's what that means, literally.
And you can tell that he's struggling mentally right now because it's affecting him on the field as well. He's made some pretty stupid defensive plays. I don't know what it is with him. The approach is not good. I don't know.
He's chasing. He's doing things he doesn't do.
Yeah, usually he's a pretty disciplined hitter, but he's chasing pitches out of the zone. I don't know if this is definitely the first pennant race he's ever been in.
Oh, yeah. Because
he came from Oakland, and
So, actually, he would have played in the COVID playoffs. He would have played in the wild card series against the White Sox.
Yeah, I guess so. let's see how he did there, postseason batting. So, he's played... he hit 130... in those games during the COVID playoffs. So that's not great. We'll see. We'll see.
That White Sox team, good pitching.
Yeah, really good pitching. He did hit a couple home runs, walked 5 times in 28 plate appearances. So, you know, everything was relatively consistent. And who knows, maybe it was good contact and bad result.
Yeah. I will say this. If you're going to hit 180, is that what you said? So if you're only going to have
130,
if you're only going to have 2 hits in the playoffs in a series, it might as well be home runs.
He had 3 hits and 2 were home runs. He walked 5 times. But yeah, he's chasing a lot. I don't know what his chase rate, I don't know if you can look at splits on that and see if it's changed recently, but I feel like this is kind of something that happens when you're struggling as a hitter. It seems like every time you go up there, you're down 0-2 or whatever, 1-2.
You push, right?
Yeah. I'm not too concerned about it. It's ultimately it's going to be an approach thing. I mean, he's got to stop chasing shitty pitches on the first pitch. But you know, his highest batting average in all of his splits, I believe, is when he's either 0-1 or 2-1. Right. So
okay.
0-1 means he watched. This is what that tells me. When you have a really high batting average on 0 and an 0-1 count, it means that I went up there with a very specific pitch in a specific location that I wanted, and maybe the first pitch was a good pitch, but not my pitch, and the second pitch was my pitch, and I hit it hard. That's what that tells me. 2-1 is just a hitter's count, but that's what that tells me on an 0-1 count, and that shows that you have a good approach going in. And I would imagine if I was able to split this over the last like 30, 40 days, something like that, that number probably would be a lot lower, to be honest. Like, his approach is just not good right now. He's pressing. He's swinging. He's probably swinging more on the first pitch than he has been, stuff like that.
Yeah. So, interestingly, and maybe this is something Atlanta's told him to do as well. Now, I can't find, like, current, like, splits, but, like, for, like, the last month or whatever. But even for this season, he's actually 4% above his highest all time for outside the zone swing percentage, he's also swinging more in the zone than he ever has before, only by 2% over last year, which was his highest year. But I mean, the numbers have gone like significantly up. His lowest, like, I don't know, 2019, let's call it 67.6%. He's swinging 75.8 in the zone now. And swinging, this is the most he's ever swung in a season, regardless.
That's interesting. I don't know why he would do that, because, I mean, one of the basic fundamentals of sabermetrics is the further you get into an at-bat, the more likely you have success, right? Whether it's on base or a hit.
Yeah.
The more pitches you see, the more likely you're going to get a hit or a walk.
And the more pitches you see, certainly in your first, call it 2 to 3 at-bats, the more success you're going to have in your successive at bats against that same pitcher.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's one of those, I hate to use cliche terms, but you got to trust the process. And when you struggle, you just keep doing the same thing over and over again. Delco's fucking nodding at me. I'm going to throw something heavy at his head.
Are you agreeing with our baseball?
No, he always says trust the process no matter what. Like, somebody's house could be on fire. You got to trust the process, man.
By the way, I want the Braves to win the division.
Yeah.
But if they don't, we need to really have a lot of fun with the Phillies Braves
wild card. Oh, yeah. Series. I think so. Delco's got to start training to fight Brian Urlacher, anyways.
Yeah.
So you may as well. You guys should schedule something, right?
Yeah.
Just get on the mats.
Fine. I'll roll with Dan.
Yeah. But yeah. Olsen's been struggling more than anybody. I think he is just pressing. I mean, you could tell by the chase rate and the swing rate.
You know, I wonder if he's pressing all year, in part because, you know, big contract.
I mean, this happens when dudes get their big contract. A lot of folks think that they relax and settle in, but I think it's always the opposite. I think they're trying to justify the money. I don't think that a type A athlete at the highest possible level gets a big contract and says, "All right, I'm done." I don't believe that, because it's not out. Like, I'm that kind of person. And that's definitely not. I would be under intense pressure every single day to be worth the money that I'm making. Right. I think that's probably what it is.
And you know, another aspect that's overlooked is he's a local boy.
Yeah,
he grew up a Braves fan.
Yeah, but fortunately for us, there aren't just four people in the fucking lineup, and everybody else is destroying the fucking ball.
No, and this is what happens over the course of a regular season, right? Where you have, and like, people, I suppose, put in a lot of ways. So the 3 months that are the most magnified in the Major League Baseball season are October, September, and April.
Mm.
Right? Those are the 3 months where everyone freaks out about how someone's doing.
Yeah.
October, of course, makes the most sense because it's the postseason. April, because you get, you know, video game numbers, because the sample size is so small, where it's like, oh, he's hitting 500 with 10 home runs. He's on pace for, you know, fucking 90 home runs, whatever, blah, blah, blah. I think that one year, the first year we had Justin Upton, he hit, I think he hit like 25 or something home runs that year, and 14 of them were in April.
Yeah, 14, to start the season.
He was just like on some insane pace. Yep. And then did not keep that up
Yeah, I guess unless you're like people have a bad month from time to time, unless you're Michael Harris.
Yeah, right.
His second month in the big leagues, was an adjustment period for him. He struck out a little bit more than usual, and he hit 222. But it's the only month that he hasn't hit over 300 in.
Yeah.
And that dude is fucking incredible. He's really good.
He is fantastic.
Really good at baseball. And it's not just him carrying the load, although he, no matter where in the lineup they've put him, he's hit well.
He's done incredibly.
Except the only place in the lineup where he hasn't hit over 300 is batting first or second, and he's only played one game in those two places.
Right.
Everywhere else, he's hitting over 300.
And I don't love him in either of those spots yet. Anyway.
I don't know that I would ever, like, fifth is probably the best spot for him because you're turning the lineup over right there again. Like, he's just, you can say that nine is a second leadoff hitter, but I think five is a second leadoff hitter as well.
Agreed. I think one, five, and nine are where you want some combination of speed and OBP.
Yeah, for sure.
Obviously, five, you want power as well, and Harris has plenty of that. So that's, I mean, he's literally a five-tool player.
He is one of the best young players that I've seen in a very... He and Rodriguez from Seattle are probably the two best young players that have come out in fucking 10 years, since Mike Trout, to be honest.
And I don't want to, a lot of people kind of have fun shitting on Acuna because he's flamboyant and has a lot of fun, but he can be immature at times. That vibe does not, Harris doesn't do that.
No, he's sitting in the dugout by himself on the iPad.
Yeah.
Most of the time looking at fucking swings and shit.
And look, I love Acuna. And to be quite frank, Acuna is probably more physically talented than Michael Harris.
Yeah, definitely bigger. And I don't think he's faster, but he's bigger. To be honest, their arms are about the same. They both throw about 100 miles per hour, which is pretty funny. But
more power out of Acuna.
Certainly more natural power, yeah. More raw power. And you can't say enough about the defense that kid plays either.
No. So the guys who have been carrying the load in the sort of big bat slump last 2 weeks, like you said, Harris, the two I'm really excited about. So Grossman and Contreras have hit really well as well. Mm-hmm. Very happy to see that out of Grossman. Great underrated move by Alex Anthopoulos. But the two guys I'm really, really happy to see hitting so well are Darnell and Eddie Rosario, pulling like a 160 something WRC plus. If we get Rosario raking again, if we get Rosario's bat, like bat to where it needs to be, finally, like fuck, I don't care what his season line looks like.
Yeah, I mean, he's hitting 400 the last 2 weeks. That's good. He's hitting 280 the last month. That'll play.
I mean,
as Ross would say,
We've seen, Jorge Soler won the World Series MVP, rightfully so, but there were a lot of good players in the World Series. There were a lot of good contributors in the World Series. Eddie Rosario went to rub some salt in the wound. He went like fucking Kobe on the Dodgers.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like he fucking...
Well, he was all playoff long. He hit 383 in the playoffs last year with three home runs, 11 RBI. That's a pretty good fucking... And he was platooning a lot, too. Like, he wasn't playing every game.
Yeah.
Right? And if he was, a lot of times he came in midway through the game. But the reason I think you probably won't see Acuna at DH much is because of how good Contreras has hit this year.
And it's,
I think he had, like, maybe a two-week period. He had, like, he was, like, a 1-for-19 in a 20-game stretch, but it's the only slump he's even been in all year. And if you look at his and Darno's combined statistics, the slash line is 274, 334, 502, which is an 836 OPS, 37 home runs, 99 RBI, over 100 runs scored.
If a catcher did that, if one single catcher...
That would be the MVP running away.
Yes.
Nobody else would even get a vote, to be 100%.
Honest. 100%.
So it's, they're looking pretty good in that regard. But I think you got to find a way to keep Contreras in the lineup.
I agree. Well, and part of that is, so I was reading just through a Reddit thread the other day, like a post-game thread when we were playing the Mariners, and some Mariners fan was like, man, like 1-9, every single one's a home run threat. That's how you win championships.
Yeah.
And that you need Contreras' bat in there. Like you need a pitcher to be afraid of making a bad pitch against every single hitter.
Yep.
Because you know, pitchers, they don't want to give up, obviously, a hit ever.
Yeah.
But, man, you give up a home run in a playoff game, everything changes it's so quickly.
It's not good. Like, if you're in the National League, especially right now, and you're looking at the Braves and some of the struggles of the middle of the lineup, it's like, do you still really feel comfortable that you can go to 2-3-4 and find an easy out? Because maybe with Olsen right now, because his approach sucks, but Dansby and fucking Riley are still putting together really quality at bats.
Yes.
The success rate is down right now, which is, that's something that'll fucking...
That'll be fine.
It'll work itself out over time. Yeah, it's rough. I wouldn't want to pitch against this team.
No, I mean, every single at-bat has the potential for a fucking nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you want. You want 1-9, essentially. The same way you want your pitchers now, especially in the playoffs. I think in the regular season, you can finesse it a bit more.
Yeah.
But in the playoffs, you want your pitchers to be able to get a strikeout
whenever
they want. And you want your hitters, obviously no hitter can hit a home run whenever they want, but you want basically, I mean, like minimum 6-year dudes on a playoff roster to be like a 20 homer type guy who at any moment can inject a lightning bolt into the game.
Yeah. Well, that's what we have here. So
9 out of 9.
Yeah.
Maybe the only one you could say, and I wouldn't even quite say it, but the only one you could say who doesn't have that capability is, what, Vaughn Grissom? Not that he doesn't have the power, but that...
Yeah, he's still a little raw. I don't know if he's... I don't know. I don't think he's reached the point yet where he can fucking go hunting and find a pitch and drive it. I think he hits home runs on accident, which is a good thing for a young guy to do, by the way. Like, you learn that other stuff later.
You have to make a worse mistake to Vaughn than you would to another, the rest of the Braves hitters.
But still, it's like...
He's got the raw power.
He's still hitting 300.
Right, so. Yeah, it's fucking fine.
Yeah.
over the last 30 days, by the way, is a similar picture. Grossman dips. Riley is actually like 100-ish WRC plus over the last month. But no, again, I think that's fine. And I like... One thing I say this all the time about Rosario. One thing I love about Rosario, and I think Contreras is in that camp too. Acuna, obviously, in that camp. And I think Vaughn Grissom will probably be in a similar way, if only because he's going to get a lot of fastballs still.
Yeah.
Is there's a good mix of dudes with Acuna, Rosario, Contreras, and Vaughn Grissom. And then you've got like those guys, they're first pitch swingers, they're attackers, they are ambush type hitters. Not that the other guys won't, but then you've got Dansby, Riley, Olsen, hopefully, Darno, and Harrison Grossman, who are more, they work counts or whatever. It's such a good fucking mix of styles. It's almost like one thing Snicker's done over the last couple years is, especially last year, and I think AA, the front office, probably has something to do with this, they went left-right a lot.
Yep.
And then Albies would kind of be in there as a switch hitter to just be, you know, do his thing. I think... Keeping in mind that you want to keep people where they hit comfortably and handedness matters as well, I really, really hope that they mix and match these batters by style to sort of throw a changeup back at the pitcher. Do you know what I mean? Keep the pitcher off balance because obviously you pitch everyone differently. Do you think there's any credibility to that? To be like, okay, I got a count worker. Next up, I've got a guy, I got a psycho who's going to ambush, like who's ready to ambush me.
Well, yeah, because pitchers get into grooves, man, especially guys that are really good. So the reason that Max Scherzer got the nickname Mad Max isn't because of even how good of a pitcher he is. It's because if even the umpire delays him and what he's trying to do, he'll just start yelling at the fucking umpire. Like, get in front of the fucking plate. Ready? It's time to play baseball. Like, he gets crazy because he gets locked in. That's what he wants. He wants to get in a groove where it's just like, all right, cool. I'm doing this. And everything you can do in the same way that a pitcher, you know, changes their delivery or arm slot or, you know, changing speeds or even throwing over to first base or whatever disrupts a hitter or a base runner's timing, you're trying to do the same thing to the pitcher, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you can't do it necessarily as a batter. there's not a whole lot you can do to change unless you were stepping out and being a dick, but people don't really like that.
Right.
And I don't think most hitters really do stuff like that. But when you're setting the lineup, you can do it. You can, you know, you can keep a guy from getting in a rhythm by giving him disparate looks at the plate. And I think it's a smart strategy, especially in the playoffs where every single fucking pitch matters. I think it's a really good strategy. So, yeah, I mean, and the lineup is kind of set up that way. You've got Acuna, then you've got Dansby.
Right.
You literally got Riley, then you've got fucking Olsen. You know what I mean?
You've got, so yeah, the lineup starts out with an ambusher.
Yeah.
Then a worker. Well, then three workers, basically.
Yeah, three workers, yeah. Although I think it wouldn't be, if Rosario stays hot, I wouldn't be, you know, I wouldn't be upset to see him in the five hole or something like that.
Or Contreras, who I think is he borders more on attacker, ambusher,
yeah.
But
oh, he is, yeah.
But he can do both.
He can do both. I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing him clean up and moving Olsen down to fifth as well, just to take some pressure off of him, because I think that would help him quite a bit. But
yeah, you do, I guess, mix up the handedness a little bit. Obviously, Dansby and Acuna. And Riley, it starts out with three righties, right? Mm-hmm. And then you go lefty. So they've kind of abandoned the handedness out of just necessity.
Well, I guess it depends. Sometimes against a right-handed pitcher, they'll have Olsen in the three hole.
Okay.
But not tonight. Like, Olsen's actually batting fifth tonight.
Oh, who's
against
fourth?
Ranger Suarez. Travis d'Arnaud is fourth.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he's been hot, so why not? And then, so the lineup for tonight is Acuna, Swanson, Riley, d'Arnaud, Olsen, Contreras, Michael Harris at seven, Grissom, and then Grossman in the nine hole, okay. Which is interesting. That one's flip-flop because it was Grissom in nine and Grossman in eight. And
yeah.
I wonder if they're just flipping it around to see who does what where.
Seeing things.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the lineup's in a bit of flux right now anyway between, you know, basically Contreras, Rosario, d'Arnaud, and Grossman. But yeah, I think because they can't do it with handedness, I would love to see, you know, Acuna, Dansby, Riley, and then, yeah, maybe go Contreras or Rosario, and then Olsen fifth, and then Contreras or Rosario again.
Yeah.
And then you can fill it out with Harris, Grossman, Grissom, whatever order you want in the last three.
Yeah.
I think I just like the idea. It's like a lot of like pre-snap movement, right? You want to confuse the defense, throw them out of their rhythm or whatever, or a lot of pre-snap movement on the defense's part to not let the quarterback get a read on just keeping people uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. You see guys get locked in. If you're a batter and you see the pitcher getting locked into a zone, like you're just getting into the box and he's already fucking sitting there waiting to throw the pitch. I'm not saying step out, but in my brain, I take more pitches in that at bat than I normally would just to disrupt him.
Yeah.
Even if I don't have success in that at bat, I'm still taking pitches just for that reason. So 100%. It makes sense.
I hope they institute something like that. I wonder, you know, that seems like a type of thing where a front office might have numbers on that.
Yeah.
But that's not something that the actual, like, you know, Fangraphs Baseball Reference, they don't necessarily keep. That'd be a hard thing to calculate.
That's a lot of work.
Yeah. And it's something you pay someone like $100,000 to do if you're like a major league organization. No. Nobody at Fangraphs making, you know, $30,000 is going to do that. Maybe. I mean, they're kind of big nerds about it. So
they
maybe
are nerds, but it's mostly interns, I think, over there.
Yeah. Real quick, I didn't have this on the rundown, but I thought there was something funny we should talk about before we get out of here. As everyone knows, because we've talked about it on a couple of the other shows, Aaron Judge may very well tie Roger Maris on Apple TV tomorrow night. Turns out Albert Pujols may very well hit the 700 mark also on Apple TV. Are you rooting for both to happen or neither to happen?
It's a good question. I mean, look, Amazon having that Thursday night game has produced good results so far because people are amped about it. And they put a lot of effort into the production, and they got good announcers on board. Apple's announcers fucking suck.
Awful.
Like, the nice thing about some of the other nationally televised baseball games is that sometimes they'll bring the local announcer into the broadcast, or somebody from there into the broadcast, or they just have good announcers, generally speaking.
Right.
But Apple TV's baseball announcers fucking suck.
Who's their play-by-play? I'll just look it up.
It's different every fucking game I watch, but there's like two women and a dude on the fucking broadcast team.
Did they get Mendoza? Oh, no, they got Katie Nolan.
Yeah. It's like, I don't fucking, this isn't the time for this bullshit, dude. Trying to watch baseball.
And I, by the way, I'm not trying to like be like, oh, they got a fucking chick. Because like Doris Burke, great announcer.
Yeah, and Michelle Tafoya. There's a fucking ton of outstanding female broadcasters that I'll watch anytime in any sport.
Yeah.
But I haven't, what female baseball broadcaster is there? That's like legit. I don't know. Nobody
likes Mendoza. Katie Nolan's not even a baseball person.
Mendoza's an asshole. Mendoza like put Judge on the spot at the All-Star game. That was a total cunt move. I don't know why she did that.
Was that she did like, she put like a Jim Gray and just like ambush him with
that? Yeah. She was like, oh, so you're going to be a Yankee next year? Like, okay, cool. We're here to fucking for the All-Star game, not to get roasted by the press.
Right.
Thank you.
Man, the play-by-play guys, Steven Nelson and that's the studio. Steven Nelson and Melanie Newman. I don't know who those people are. But yeah, I mean, Amazon got fucking Al Michaels, right? You would think maybe try to lure like Bob Costas or something. I will tune into any Bob Costas broadcast.
Somebody, man. I mean, honestly, who's Apple leveraging right now? Is it MLB Network or somebody, or who is it? Because is MLB Network, they're not hooked up with Fox. Because Fox is owned by ESPN.
MLB Network's owned by Major League Baseball. It's its own thing.
Yeah, so is that who they're pulling talent from? Because Steven, whatever the fuck, came from MLB Network.
Okay.
But I don't know who these other people are, but there's a bunch of talent over at MLB Network, like Chris Patrick and shit. Yeah,
Brian Kenny,
yeah. There's a bunch of people over there that would be... Even for color, what's his name? Carlos, whatever the fuck. The left-handed first baseman that started with Oakland and went to Detroit.
He is actually on.
He's on Apple TV?
He's on their studio.
Yeah, but like fucking put him on the play-by-play.
Yeah,
man.
Carlos Pena,
yeah.
He is in their studio broadcasting.
I really like that dude. And also they have the dude that used to play second base for the Braves, DeRosa. He's on that team as well. Is he on the Apple broadcast? So maybe there's
no, he's not on Apple. The players they have, Hunter Pence, that's fun at least because he's a lunatic.
He is.
And then, I don't know, Wayne Randazzo, Chris Young. I don't know those guys well.
Oh, Chris CY, yeah. Chris Young is a center fielder for, I think he played for the Rockies and a bunch of other people.
He played for the Red Sox, too, I think.
Red Sox, yeah. I don't know him as a broadcaster, but I enjoyed him as a player.
Right, yeah. I won't judge either. I don't know, because I don't know how either of them are.
But I've listened to two or three games on Apple TV so far, and it's not been good.
It's not as bad as YouTube or Facebook's broadcast. No,
I didn't even bother with any of that
Facebook
bullshit.
Was about as bad as you could have possibly imagined.
I liked the StatCast shit that Apple TV includes. It's really interesting. And I think, having it on Apple TV, they need to build some GUI, like some GUI fucking functionality where I can drill down into that shit. Like on MLB TV, I can click this little 3-box thing and pull up all the stats and look at StatCast shit and then hit it again and it all goes away. That's really nice. But people, that's like 5 minutes. Or I'm sorry, 5% of what you're doing during the broadcast. The other part, you're listening to what these assholes are saying. And it needs to be somebody that knows what they're talking about and that I want to listen to. Otherwise, I'm going to turn it to something else, to be honest. Or just turn the volume off entirely.
Yeah, it's not ideal. So it'll be funny if both happen. Because, I mean, the amount of New Yorkers and St. Louisans that would then not get to watch that home run live.
So it's not on the Yes Network?
Yeah.
That'd be pretty funny.
Bally Sports Midwest. That's hilarious, but also tragic.
Uh-oh, what happened here?
Got something going on?
Well, the Cardinals have scored 5 runs, but none of them were Pujols hitting a home run, so I don't care. Yeah, don't care.
And where are they at, San Diego?
Yep. Playing the day game.
Sweet. Cool, because Jack Flaherty is my fantasy pick. I'm in the championship. Up against, he must listen to the show very regularly because he renamed himself Dairy Queen is Texas. David Tierna.
Yeah.
Tarina. Fuck you, David Tarina. But we're playing each other in the finals. And so that'll maybe hopefully put Jack Flaherty in line for the win. Could use another one of those. But that's all I got for today.
Same.
Fucking see you later.